Good evening, everybody. My name is Johnny McKnight. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 22nd, 1985. Now, you're going to find out that I like a lot of humor. So I'm going to relax you right off. You notice I brought this little plastic bag up here. Now, those that heard my story last Sunday night know what this plastic bag is for. In case my teeth jump out, I'm going to put them in here. So I want y'all to be prepared, because I'm going to keep right on talking. I talk real fast, and if you know me, I've lost a lot of weight over the last few months. And my teeth are having a hard time staying in place. Now we got that out the way. Next, I'd like to thank you guys, the committee, for inviting me up to talk. Top of Texas is always going to be special to me. For the 52nd anniversary, it's really special. Packer talked this afternoon. It's been a lot of people that stood ahead of us here. And it's an honor for me to be able to be here to share. And when I told her it was an honor, it's because, you see, I know there's a whole lot more people got a whole lot more time than I do in this town. And I was thinking, haven't they heard my story enough? But, you know, maybe something in the story is going to be different because God's in charge. I never know what's coming out of my mouth. Because when I came in the doors and they got my massage on, I went by the bathroom and I did the surrender prayer. And I asked God to help me. Gosh, to be standing here to talk about a program of Alcoholics Anonymous, for a woman didn't want to come in here kicking and screaming. I came in kicking and screaming. My family is in the audience, and so I have to tell the truth because they know more about me than anybody else. One of my ex-sponsors is in the audience, and he sure know a lot about me. So I'm going to get as honest as I can get right now. Also, I want to thank the Al-Anon speaker. As Pappy spoke with the Al-Anon speaker this afternoon, relieved me of the bondage itself. I tell you, for the first time in my life, I heard third step prayer today. Because that lady got through with me, I was free. I have traveled all around the world trying to find the right Al-Anon speaker, and she was right here in Amarillo, Texas. Right here all the time. I got her phone number. I got to call her. I'm the oldest of five kids. And if you're the oldest, you tell people what to do. And I came into the program Alcoholics Anonymous, and they told me I couldn't tell people what to do. And I thought they'd gone out of their mind because I had tried to do it for years. I want you to know I come from one of those religious homes. I'm going to talk about mine from the beginning to the end. That's the way I talk. I came from one of those religious homes, and that Al-Anon speaker this afternoon said something. I don't know, I might tell her story for her, because she said, you know, I can't blame my parents for anything that happened to me. I want you to know that. But my parents was in my life. And let me tell you, until I got to you, I blame my stepfather, now I can say adopted father, for everything that ever happened to me. It was his fault that I was the way I was. I discovered the last few months that, you know, over the years I've discovered things about me. They talk about peeling an onion. And over the years going through treatment in different places, I found out that I take hostages. You are mine forever. And I find out over the years that if you promise me something, I'm going to hold you to it. I don't care if you promised it to me when I was six. I expected you to have done it by the time I was 40. And if you ain't done it, I am pissed off. You see. Now, this father of mine was supposed to send me some rulers and pencils and papers to go to school in Amarillo, Texas, when I was in the first grade. Let me take that back, in the second grade. And by the time I arrived at you, I hadn't gotten my rulers yet. You know, and I was still pissed off, and the man was deceased. And you know, I remember my sponsor, ex-sponsor in the audience tonight, telling me, so he still had the power, huh? He still controls you from the grave. I will never forget that. Because this man had a lot of control on me. And I didn't like that. This church home my mother, I want to tell you about. My mother was a church lady. I do believe I'm one of those people. And a lot of things you will hear, some of the things you hear is my opinion. And my opinion is that I inherited my disease from family members. That's my opinion. And on my mother's side was a lot of drinkers. And I have you to know I like the drinking life. I am not one of those alcoholics that came in here and didn't like to drink. I often wonder, why did you drink it if you didn't like it? I've never understood that. From the day I tasted bourbon, I loved it from Get Strip. I didn't like beer. Beer was too slow. That's the only reason I didn't like it. It tasted pretty good, just too slow. And by the time I was 13, from this church home, from this manipulating mother, from this adopted father that I had, I found booze at 13. Now, I do believe I found God about the same time. This church home, I remember going to a revival one evening with my mother. My mother believed in church. Now, my mother was a periodic drinker. By working in the field and going to treatment and stuff, I understand what periodics are. They drink a while, they quit a while. I mean, that's just it. They try to control their drinking. And my mother was that type of a drinker. Now, my dad, on the other hand, drank all the time. He went to church. He sung good in the choir. He ran our family, and he still drank. Now, I didn't see anything wrong with this man's drinking because, you know, to me, that was normal, the drinking part. What I seen was this man was mean. And he was so mean that I couldn't wait to grow up and get away. So I'm at this revival, and these people are praying and shouting, and they want you to find God. And all of a sudden, I felt something. That's something that I came all the way in Alcoholics Anonymous still looking for. Because that night I felt that something that you're supposed to feel when you find that higher power that we talk about around here. And I found him that night, but by the time they baptized me, a couple of weeks later, he'd moved away. And I didn't understand where I took. Nobody told me that I wasn't going to feel the same every day. Because that's what I expected. When you got this religious deal, man, you're supposed to always be bouncing around. You're supposed to always be having a good time. And I was missing it somewhere. And I didn't know what was going on. But see, a few months later, we're traveling down the highway, and my dad, around the same time, is saying, "Johnny, reach under that seat and hand me that bottle of bourbon." And I say, "Yes, sir, Dad." And I pop that top off that bottle of bourbon, and I take me a swig and pass it up to him. And he passed it back, and I take me another swig and put the top back on. Put it on the seat. He said, "Okay," when we were riding along, my daddy said, "We took a lot of trips. I love the trips now. I love to go. You come go with me. I just took a bunch of women up to Ohio with me last couple of weeks. Man, I love to go. It's just in my blood. Let's go. Get on the highway. I can run out here tonight and run out quick with my girlfriend. Just let me go. It don't make no difference. I got a friend here from out quick and want to recognize her and her friend that drove up to hear me talk tonight. I have friends all over the world. Anyway, going up the highway, and Dad said, "Reach in there and hand me one of those beers." I said, "Yes, sir, Dad." And I popped that can of beer, and I take a drink out of it, and I pass it up. Well, the two shots of bourbon had already done the job. The beer just the kind on the icing and on the cake. Because by the time we get all the way to Dallas, man, I know every crook and turn in the highway. I know don't do this and don't do that and don't pass the yellow line. I can't even drive a car. But I know how to drive well without a steering wheel. I say, my dad was a talent on the mountain person. This is how you do this deal. And by the time I got my driver's license, have you to know, at 21. My poor mother tried to teach me how to drive the car. I ran in the ditch. She threw me out the car and told me I'd never learn to drive a car. She was almost right. I thought I'd never learn. But I did. In the process of drinking this bourbon, I started going with servicemen by the time I was 17. Now, I want you to know my husband is in the audience. And he know my life story better than you. He was in Canada with me this past year. And he probably heard some things then. He probably going to hear some more now. And if he keep running with me, he might hear the whole story. I started going with servicemen around 17. And I used to say that I went with servicemen because they could buy popcorn. But I tell you, I went with servicemen with some stripes on their sleeves because they could buy booze. That's the reason I was going with it, because by this time, my mother and dad has locked down the booze. And we can't get to it. Now, my dad had a strict deal. You got to be in at a certain time. And if you go out through service, I mean, the base don't shut down to 1. And you got to get in early, and you're trying to get all the booze in. You can't, so you got to drink fast. And, you know, you ain't got time for all this romantic stuff because you're trying to feel good because you're trying to forget something you don't even know you're trying to forget. And I didn't even know it, see. I didn't know it until I got you. I was trying to forget something because I just like to drink. That was the whole idea. At 19 years of age, I drank like that until I was 19 years of age. I've been drinking a long time, but I met this new guy. The difference in this guy was I walked in my mother's restaurant one day, and I had this dilemma problem. You know, it was a dilemma. She was working in this restaurant, and I was trying to solve this problem, whatever the dilemma was. And this little short off guy come bouncing in the door with this laid down process on his head. And he looks a cool man. And he started calling her mom, and I got in a heated argument with him, and I said, this is not your mother. And he said, yes, it is. I said, no, it's not. Next thing I know, I quit arguing, because I know I ain't his mother. I wasn't raised with him, so he came to his son. So he said, you know, you're a smart chick. I'm going to marry you. I said, baby, I wouldn't marry you if you were the last man on earth. But let me tell you something. I married that old boy in October. I met him in August, and in October I was saying I do. Now, I don't know if it's because he was so slick, as I was so scared. Because by the time I went back to school that September, they were going to retain me and put me back in the 10th grade. I was already 19 in the 11th grade. Now, you ain't going to wait. I'm going to be too old when I graduate. That's what the problem was. So I get on the phone and call him and ask him, do he still want to get married? That's the only reason I married that old boy, to get away from home. Now, if you had asked me when I arrived in Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have told you that he used me. But I'm here to tell you I've learned over the years that I used him. But the difference in this guy and all the other guys, I married this guy, he was in the stockade. Now, I got to say, if you've heard my story, stockade is jail. Now, I am so green at age 19, I didn't know stockade was jail. I would never marry a jailbird. I never would have. This guy ain't got no stripes. I won't. I always wanted to marry Mr. Wright and sit on the couch and look cute. That, you know, have these diamond rings and do nothing. I have you to know I've been married 5 times, 3 times to the same guy, and I have never not worked somewhere in my life. Somewhere I've had some kind of job, mostly because I like to spend money. I like to have money. And this old boy started jumping on me and taking my money, and the marriage is over. I married him in October, and I was back home in March, and I came back home pregnant. Now, let's talk about pregnancy. I've been pregnant 7 times. I had 6 of those kids out of 7. I had a miscarriage with one. One of those is deceased, and now I have 5 children. Now, the trouble with children, they don't go back where they come from. You are stuck with them. They belong to you. And I don't like kids. I mean, I got 5 of them, and I didn't like kids. I didn't know what to do with them. When that Al-Anon lady told my story this afternoon, I did the best I could what I had to work with. Thank you. And she didn't blow me away to say, I don't want no kids, but I don't know you ain't supposed to have none. You meet a man and he holds your hand and he says he loves you and he gives you the right kiss and you go to bed and the next thing you know you're pregnant. That's all I knew. And I'm having these kids. And in between there, I get married, I have a baby. I get married to my second husband, I met him, and the difference in this second husband is that he had 4 stripes, re-up, had a brand new 6 or 6 a month, and I thought I was rich. I didn't know it's because he just had got a little check and then you just little money just to re-up. That money ain't gonna last forever. I didn't know if you spend it, it's gone. You have got to go to work. You got to save some. You know, I didn't know that. And I married this guy, and my mother said I couldn't, actually, I wasn't going to marry him. I was going to shack with him. I had no intentions of marrying this old boy. You're talking about insanity of the disease. When I came in here and they talk about the insanity, come go with me in the insanity of this disease I'm in. I married this guy. He, you know, my mother come running across the alley. See, I moved. I moved out of my mother's house because my dad kept bugging me. So I moved across the alley. I don't want to move far. You know, I don't want to move too far. I might need you. I take hostages. I already told you that. I take hostages, and I don't want you to get too far. I might need you. And come to find out, my mother comes running across the alley, and she says, you know, you can't live with this guy across the alley from me. I said, well, okay. So I moved him across town. She comes across town. I showed my son one time that place where I moved, and said, well, mother, you didn't move far enough. It wasn't very far. That's what I'm trying to tell you. I didn't want to get too far. But I moved across town from her, and she come flying over there, and she said, you can't live with this guy. Now, here's the insanity of this disease. I kept this young man over to New Mexico and married him. Brought back the license to my mother and said, here they are. Now, the insanity of the disease, I never divorced the first husband. In the state of Texas, I know that's charges. And I'm quite sure it is in other states. The only thing is they didn't catch me because I'm still standing here. But the problem is I just wanted my mother off my back. Now, my mother gets off my back, and then my mother had the nerve to die on me. Now, I was pissed off. I wasn't only pissed off at God. I was pissed off at my mother. Because you see, my mother fixed anything that goes on with me. My mother is the fixer of it. I don't know how to live. By this time, I am 22 years old, and I am angry at God. My husband is overseas. By this time, we had had a little boy. He goes overseas, leaves me with this kid. And I come to find out, you know, that I do not want to be dealing with this kid. So what happens to me is I start to change my actions. I switch from a drink called bourbon to a drink called scotch. And I start drinking Johnny Walker Red Scotch, and I start drinking it on ice, and I thought I had arrived. I thought my life had changed. I had changed from bourbon to scotch, and life was different for me. Well, let me tell you something. I started living on this scotch. In the process of my husband being overseas, my son died. That's the son that is deceased right today. And I didn't know what to do about that. So I get scared. I remember a guy, by the time my husband came overseas, a guy named Walter J. used to be in this program, said something to me. He said, I know a place where you can be happy, and you never have to be alone again, and people will love you. And I said, where is this place? And he said, Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 22 years old, folks. I said, I hope y'all get better. I hope y'all get better, because I don't need to go there. Now, Walter seen a problem with me drinking at 22. Do you know I was 38 when I arrived here? I had a lot of problems by the time I arrived here. I had gotten so bad. Booze had shot me so bad. By the time I arrived here, all I could remember is Walter said that to me. In the process of my son dying, my husband came back from overseas, and we ended up in Washington, D.C. I ended up pregnant with a daughter that I have in the room this afternoon today. Got these kids, and I moved back from Washington, D.C., and I had her here, and the marriage fell apart, and we did get a divorce, and then in the process of getting this divorce, I met the husband I'm married to today. Now, I've been married to this guy three times. That lets you know I was already insane. I mean, you know, we got an insane problem here. And that come about so strange. You know, it came so strange. Because, you see, I know this guy today loves me, but, you see, I'm not capable of love. I don't know what love is. I know what hostages is. I know what let me pick up your paycheck is. I know let me spend the money is. Now, that's love. That is love if I'm getting the greenback dollars. Now, if you think the guy I married to with the 66 demands and this little re-up money was doing something. When I met this guy, he had one dump truck. I had three kids by this time. I am pregnant with our first child, and I am picking up $2,000 a week checks. I know I was rich. I can give parties for the whole town. And I did. I'd give a party, and I heard somebody tell on the tape the other day, and I couldn't close the party out. Somebody else would have to lock them up. I'd be gambling on the streets. Frank came in one day from work, and he said to me, Johnny, I wrote a check for a tire for the truck. And I said, you did what? I knew I was in trouble because I had gambled off all the money. See, I was a gambler, too. When they talk about addictions in this deal, I know what addictions is. I start gambling off the money. So when Frank came in and he said he'd wrote a check for the tire, I was totally upset. I said, what? So I went crazy on it. I just went absolutely crazy. Didn't say nothing, just went off on it. Did it about 3 days. Like I said, I was pregnant with our first daughter. So he finally asked me, I guess he thought it was part of my pregnancy. He said, what is wrong with you? Why are you upset? So now, you look, I already been married twice before I married him. So what's going to happen? I mean, the worst thing can happen is he can get out because that was my apartment. So he can move out after he jump on me and leave me pregnant. That's the worst thing can happen. I always thought what was the worst thing can happen to me. So when I told him, he said, why are you upset? I said, I wrote a check for the tie. I mean, I wrote a check down the street, and the check you wrote for the tithes is going to bounce. And he walked right past me. I do today believe he was getting his composure. I believe he didn't want to stop right then and knock me out. And then he turned around, he came back, and he said to me, what? He said, why is the check going to bounce? I said, I was gambling down on the street, and on about the gambling. He finally, he looked at me real funny, and then he said, I want to ask you a question. I said, yes, sir. What's the question? Did you learn a lesson? What is a drunk going to say? Hell yeah, I learned a lesson. you think I'm going to say no? Well, I learned a lesson. I learned not to tell you the truth no more. That's the lesson I learned. I bet that day he probably wished from that day on he'd have picked up his stuff and walked, because it got bad. You think that was something. He bought a second truck, and the checks increased, and I got richer. And things got wild. And then we sold the trucks. And then he went to a job where they started telling him about, he started telling people about that lady at his house. There's a lady at my house, and I don't know what to do about it. I guess is what he must have been saying. Because he came in one day, and he said, I got something to say to you. And I said, what is it? And it was around 1983. Because his birth, it was August of 1983 when I walked up to Stepford Top of Texas out here. So he said to me, you got to do something about your drinking. He said, I was telling some people on the job. And he said, they said, and I was telling him about your drinking, he said, maybe you ought to see a psychiatrist. Now, let me tell you something. I had seen a psychiatrist one time. And the psychiatrist told me I was moving too fast. I know today, if you were drinking as much scotch as I was drinking, you'd move fast, too. There was nothing wrong with me just drinking too much. That's the problem. And I went off on him. He said, I tell you what, he backed up. My husband had a habit of backing up. He just, I was wild. He said, do something. So he said, so in August of 1983, I was watching TV. It was August the 8th is his birthday. I've always celebrated Frank's birthday. He's always at work. He don't drink. He drink. Frank don't smoke. He don't dance. He don't chase women. He just go to work and bring his check home. I thought he was insane. I never met anybody like that before. I always get the money. You know, I didn't understand him. My first husband was Bama's, man. We fought our battle. Who's going to get you the money first? He didn't do that, and I understand him. So it was his birthday. He was out on his job, working like normal people do, I guess. And I was celebrating his birthday at home. And across the screen on August the 9th ran this message. If you want help with your drinking, call this number. Now, I know today, back in 1983, I was 38 years old, that God had intervened in my life. Because a lot of stuff had happened from age 22 to 38. And Frank was tired, and the marriage was about over. We'd had all these kids. I had another child by him. And so now we got these five kids to raise, and I am so grateful for Frank because Frank raised those kids. It took somebody several, already ready for marriage, to stay married to me. Because I tell you, I was a nut. I was totally insane. I'd go to a motel and get drunk and call him and say, why don't you come be with me? And I just left home and didn't want to be with him. Now, you know, that's insanity. That's insanity. But I called him and didn't come to the motel. I mean, and he just said, go to sleep, John, and hang up the phone. Hey, look. I say, I ain't coming right now. You know, I can get off running. I'm running away from home. One of my weekend drunks in Santa, I'm out at the Leaders Motel, a call from the VA. Every time I go by the Skyline Motel, I think about this. I'm at the Skyline Motel one night, run away from home. Nobody but me. I don't want no man. I don't want no kids. I just want to get away. I bought my last bottle. I bought that bottle that night. Insanity of the disease. And then I'm going to go on into the steps. But the insanity of the disease is that particular night, I had two bottles of them. I had a full bottle, a used bottle. I paid $20 for the last $20 I had for a room. And just as I put my key in that door and turned that key, one of them bottles fell. And I start praying. God, don't let it be the fool. Serious as hell. I needed that drink. I didn't care. You know what the fool went in to have this bottle. And I sat in the middle of that motel room, and I cried like a two-year-old kid. Because I ain't got no more money. The man ain't going to give me back my 20, because I could have drank it in the car. I wouldn't have cared. But it ain't no money, and I don't want to go home. I don't know when I passed out, but I know I cried until I couldn't, because there wasn't that much left in that other one. And I was pissed off. The insanity of the disease. When I walked up them steps out there, Guy was in that coffee bar out there. I'll never forget Guy. And this black woman walks in here with tears in her eyes, red shot, where I've been drinking all night on the 8th, and it's the 9th, and I'm still drinking. And I look like somebody been whooping on me. And I hit that door in there, and Guy started crying. I started crying, and Guy was trying to calm me down. Behind him came Nikki. I will never forget Nikki. She's always a part of my story. She was so excited. She had been to a treatment center. And what Nikki said was, I'm going to get you in Park. I will always be grateful for Park. She called for it. And at that time, they didn't have a detox center. So they got me in a detox center out on the other end of town, right down the street from my house. I mean, I wasn't far. I wasn't the woods is right down the street where I live today. It was there. And I went through this underwear, and these guys was there with these funny-looking pajamas on. And these bloodshot eyes and these funny-looking shoes. In fact, I talk about them funny-looking shoes today, I just wanted to crack up. You know, because I've seen some of them shoes. I know what they look like. And I knew I had not arrived at the Ritz. I knew I was in the wrong place. This is not what I had in mind for rest. I tell you, I did my 5 days and come up out of there. But I decided to go by park just to see what it was like. And they had this fireplace out there. And you know, I always wanted to lay around the fireplace and look sophisticated and look real good. And when I got to park, the man said to me, he said, you think you can stay sober and we'll let you in here for 48 hours, I believe that's what it was, whatever it was, 72 hours, I think. I said, yes. But just as I went out the door, I decided maybe I'll have a glass of ice water. I'll get a glass of ice water on my way out the door, and I reached under the seat as I got outside and got that fifth of Johnny Walker Red out from under that seat and made me another drink. That was in September, October of that year. In January of 84, I went to treatment. And Park changed my life because what they told me is that I was the problem. And they introduced me to these 12 steps on the board as they started to take us to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's the key. We don't go to meetings. Treatment can only help so far. I love what Clancy I said. AA keeps rowing the boat. He keeps rowing the boat. If you want to stay up with the row of the boat, you got to come to meetings where the book is, where the sponsors are, where the meetings are, where new drunks are, where we can help you out, where old timers are. You got to keep rowing the boat. I've seen them steps on the wall apart. And I couldn't accept step one. I was not powerless. And the only thing I wanted to do was go out and make amends, tell everybody how sorry I was, and they already knew it. They didn't want to hear it no more. They had heard I was sorry before. So you see, I got out of treatment, did my 28 days, went with Lauren P. to a conference. That's why I started out going in AA. The very first service meeting I ever went to was in El Paso, Texas, at 7 o'clock in the morning in El Paso, Texas. I thought they'd gone nuts. What in the world are we getting up this time of morning? Because that's the only spot they had to put it in. They did that meeting before they did the first meeting. I said, why am I going to a service meeting? He said, one day you will know. Go. And when I got ready to help put together the Touch of Soul group, I know today why I was at service meeting. I know today why I got involved in service. You got to know the rules. You got to know who to call. You got to know who to talk to. You got to know what to do. This thing runs on tradition. And if we're going to do this deal, we have to know what to do. And that's what that service shop was all about. That's what I had to learn. But I came back in 1984 and I wasn't ready yet. And I ran into this guy with these beards on his face. And if you weren't here at 3 o'clock this afternoon, I'll tell you who he was. His name was Pat. And Pastor was sitting around the Moss Lane group at that time. Moss Lane became my home group, and I could go back and tell you that. How I used to pray to get into Moss Lane. I had no idea it was an AA group. No idea. I used to pray. I used to go through the Seattle College. I was praying for it. I said, God, you're going to get me that private club over there. I was praying to get in there. Had no idea it was an AA group. You got to be careful what you pray for in Alcoholics Anonymous. You might get it. Ended up going by there when I got out of a... We get past at park, and they said, we're going to another group. And I said, where is it? It was Moss Lane. So I had been to Moss Lane, so when I came back from El Paso, Texas, I went into Moss Lane. I knew it was going to be my home group from Gistrip. I just wasn't ready yet. But I'd go to those new meetings, and I'd stagger out half messed up and come out, and there'd be Pappy sitting there. And Pappy said, oh, you're still drinking, huh? Well, you go back out there, and you drink again, and we'll be here when you get back, if you get back. And I'd go back out there and take another drink. I did that for about 2 months, and Patty kept sending me back out. I stayed out the last time I went out. I stayed out from April of 84 to January of 85. And that last drunk I pulled, January of 85, coming out of Pampa, Texas, I weighed about 265 pounds at the time. I used to pack my pool stick. And I did something that the big book talks about. It talks about changing from one drink to another, trying to prove we're not. And I changed from Johnny Walker Red to tequila. I was proving I wasn't. And the bars that man drank in did not serve it liquor by the shot. You had to take your own. So I had a big gallon. I had all my lemons and limes to go with it. I got a little sophisticated, and I had my plastic glass that you put the salt on. And I'm going into this group in this place. In Pampa, Texas, and I will never forget this man sitting over here. It's just like I can see it today. And I wondered, at the time when he said it, it didn't dawn on me until I sobered up. I had this big sack, I had this pool stick, I weighed 200, come go with me. I weighed 265 pounds and I'm walking in this door. This man looked at me, he said, are you moving in? I know today I must have looked like I was moving in, I'll tell you. I'm not driving my fanciest cars. That husband of mine is up there and he always kept me in nice cars. I'm so glad that, and I can go on to talk about the stuff he's done for me. That boy has always been good to me. But I was driving a Mercury that night. I had chipped the telephone poles. My car was in the shop for some reason. And I'm driving this old Mercury. I had chipped the telephone post in. I went to Pampa, Texas to borrow some money from some friends of mine. And what happened was, I went to these people's house after I'm moving in. I went to these people's house and the man asked me one question. Say, you and your husband having problems again. That's all he asked. But in my mind, the tequila said, oh, you come over here to stay on our waterbed. You come over here to tell us what to do. And then went on and on, start talking to me. And you know, the committee gets you going in your head, and you get real crazy. And you, all of a sudden, I said to him, I said, you know, I really don't have to be over here at your house. And he kind of looked at me real funny. And I went back out the door. When I got to the door, I realized I went over there to borrow some money. I got $5 from me. I am broke. I got to drive back down the road, Texas, in this Kiss Mercury. It is snowing outside, and I'm an eating drunk. If you weigh 265 pounds, you like to eat. So I got a problem. So I go to this store, and I get $3 worth of gas and a $2 cheese sandwich, and I end up coming back to Amarillo. And coming back, I looked over there at Park. If you're in this area, that old park is right out there on that side of the highway. They said, there's a place for you where people is rowing the boat. And if you tired of that, come go with us. I walked back into Top Protect Moss Lane on a Tuesday night. I can never forget it. Because that Tuesday night, it was chip night. And Pappy stood up. Same man with the beard. He said, oh, you back again, huh? Well, if you ain't through, go back. I said, wait a minute, what about the steps? He said, come on in. And he became my sponsor. And he stayed my sponsor for quite a while. And he walked me through these steps. Someone says, we admit that we're powerless over alcohol and our lives are unmanageable. I just told you that. How much more do you need to know? I just took that one with you. Where were you? Step two, I came to believe in the power. It's going to take one greater than myself to show me the sanity. And I'm going to say me, but this is a weak program. You never have to be alone again in this program. That is the key to the deal. I have been alone so long. I was out last night with some friends. We had a group conference at our meeting, and everybody was leaving, and I wanted to go out to eat. Knew what they were going to eat. I didn't want to eat there. I knew it. I knew they couldn't cook there. I didn't like the food there. But the group is going. I got to go. I don't want to be alone. I am going to be with some people. I am celebrating this weekend, and I went out to this place, had to turn back the whole meal. But I was with some people. I had a salad and some tea, some coffee, and that's good enough for me. Came back. I don't ever have to be alone again in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, whether it's in here doing a meeting or whether it's out of here and it's not a meeting going on. That's important to me. Because, see, I was alone in my own world. All my life, I was locked up. I had to come to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me from the sanity of it. Keep going out, keep drinking, keep trying to get. There's this big tree, and I keep hitting this booze, and I keep trying to go through this big tree in the middle of the road, and the thing says, go around. But then Sandy Midas, he said, I can go through the tree. I can whip that bottle of scotch any time I get ready. Well, I can tell you what, when that tequila and scotch got through with me, I was glad to stop hitting the tree. I had to make a decision in step three to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. That will of hitting that tree, a God of my understanding. I didn't understand God. I told you I found that day in church. I remember they baptized me. What happened to me? I was in a meeting one day and this lady said, God, you do not feel God the same every day. I had to come all the way to Alcoholics Anonymous to hear that. You do not feel your high power the same every day. But he ain't gone nowhere. He just don't drink today. And he'll be back. you'll feed them again. There's a third step prayer there. And that prayer is sitting there for a reason. You see, I am about to embark upon another lifestyle in step four. And I am going to, I remember the day very vivid that me and Pappy got on our knees in his kitchen. Him and I and Sandy. And we did the third step prayer together. Right there in their kitchen. In their old house. I won't forget it. And Pappy made me read it, and I won't forget it. And I couldn't even read. I told you I was behind in school. My deal in Alcoholics Anonymous was, I can't get this deal because I can't read. If you're in the audience, don't tell me that. I don't play that. Believe me, it ain't got nothing to do with you can't read and you can't stay sober. The idea is they got the big book on tape. Can you push a button? That's what they told me. And they sent me the tape. I still got those tapes today. Can you push a button? The book will read to you. Step three has this phrase. It says, God, I offer myself to thee. To build with me and to do with me as thy will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those we would help, of our power, our love, and our way of life. And let me tell you something. That prayer is talking about we. We going to do this together. But again, I said I, because I had to work on me. Because you see, I was so locked up in me that you didn't matter. I was crazy as hell. It says, God, we offer ourselves to thee. We do it together. But when they got through it, we reading it in the book, getting on our knees, and we went over. I went to Pappy's house to do this four step. You know, I thought I had my little writing together. And Pappy said to me, and I said with him in the room, I don't hear women's fifth steps. So he turned me over to Sandy, which had most of the bride in both of us. I mean, and she had her own pencil and paper. She didn't even want my stuff. She asked me, you have a mother? Write her down. Got her. She's deceased. Okay, write her down. How about a father? I got two of them. Good, write them down. So what are we doing? We just started writing down names, and I didn't know what the world was going on. She didn't even worry about if I could read or not. You see what I'm saying? See, she's helping me out. And then we started to talk about these people, and you know, I kind of got a resentment at Pat because she wasn't my sponsor. So I only told her some stuff. I didn't tell her that I hated my dad from way back when and why I hated him. But you know what? God is in charge. He got me through enough resentment to work through that until I was ready to do some more stuff. I ended up in Las Vegas, Nevada by the time I was about a year and a half sober. And being in Las Vegas, Nevada, I ran into this lady. And she was talking in the audience and she impressed me so much that I wanted what she had. When she got through talking, I ran up to her and I said, I want to talk to you. You know, when you're in a strange town, they ask you to stand up and tell you you're a visitor. Because she knew I wasn't from there and she knew I was from Texas. And so when she turned and looked at me, she said, just a minute, baby. Just like that. I do that to people all the time. I think I got that from her. I said, just a minute, baby. And she turned back when she was through and she said, what are you doing the rest of the night? Just like that. And I said, nothing. She said, let's go to my place. Let me tell you something. When I was drinking, there ain't nowhere I'd go, nowhere with no strange white woman, nowhere. I wouldn't know what umbro this was, and I wouldn't have went, but I was sober. And they had taught me enough, and they had no, well, whatever I'm doing, I'm sober enough to fight her, but that's all I knew. So I'm going with her. And I drove my car and followed her to her apartment. And let me tell you something, when that lady and I got through with all them 12 steps in one night, she got some stuff out of me I swore I'd never tell anybody. And I got back in my car, and the next day I drove out of Las Vegas, Nevada, and I have talked to her one time since then. Whatever I told her, her and God got it. It's over. But I came back to the big book study that I was in with Pat and Sandy, and Big Book John was there. Now, I'm telling you this because these old-timers, when you start walking through 4 and 5, and you start getting to 6 and 7, and you start working on your defects of character, because you see, I have a lady sponsor there, and she's got 27 years sobriety this month. Believe me, she kept me on 6 and 7 so long, I thought my defects of character were never going nowhere. I'm a car liar, mixer, and a thief. I steal. I steal anything that ain't tied down. And I heard it. I heard it. Last night at our group, whatever I'm doing, as long as it ain't affecting somebody else, where are you? long as it ain't affecting somebody else, it's all right. Heard that last night in a talk. See, I listen to every meeting I go in. I don't care who is talking. I'm going to listen. I don't care how many times How at Work is read, I'm going to listen. Because I remember the day that I finally heard How at Work sitting in Moss Main Group. And I had heard it read so many times, but one day the light came up. Hi, y'all. Spiritual awakening. You looking for a spiritual awakening in a big old brick home? Sorry. Big Cadillac car? Sorry. Diamond rings? Don't work. Spiritual awakening is when the light comes on. I heard that this morning. It just, it's like something pops on in your head. I heard that this morning. See, I go to meetings. I don't ever get too big to go. I went to this big book study, Big Book John was there. And for some reason, I don't even know how we got off on that, but some kind of reason it came out that you can't do all 12 steps in one night. And God dang, I come unglued. I had just seen them. What you mean I can't do all 12 steps in one night? I was so mad at John that night that I was going to get drunk. And John had 24 years sobriety. What would have happened to me if I'd have got drunk that night? But I was going to. Old Fred was in that group. Fred and I are friends today. Anytime Fred comes to town, he looks me up. Fred was in that group that night. Fred said, come go have a cup of coffee with me. I said, no, I'm going to get drunk. He said, you can get drunk after we had a coffee. Carried me to the same place I was at last night. That's where we went. The same place, 13 years ago, almost. Had some of the sourest coffee I ever had in my life. But I didn't have to get drunk. By the time John and that coffee, Fred and that coffee got through with me, what he said to me was, all John is saying is that you can't live all 12 steps in one night. Simple as that. You can't. The longer you stay here, the more they peel the onion. The more the onion peels, the more life gets, the more you get involved, the more you hear. You got to stick around until a miracle happens. And I don't know when your miracle is. When you do 6 and 7, I heard something in Austin, Texas, and this guy said it, and like I say, I still in the program. If I need it, I'm going to take it. I used to have a problem with what's the difference between defects of character and shortcomings. And what this guy said was, in 6, a defect of character is knowing what you have. But in 7, that you don't know what you have. But in 7, you know what you got and don't do nothing about it. And I understand that. I know I'm a thief. In 6, I find that out. Now I know I'm a thief. Now I'm at 7, I'm still stealing. What is your problem? You know you're a thief, stop stealing. See, that's what I'm saying. We used to run around the program saying, oh, we steal the day lesson we stole yesterday. We did that in the early sobriety. Oh, we steal the day lesson we stole yesterday. And the man said, what are you doing, still stealing? That's what it's saying. You're still stealing. And you got to change that. I like it. You might not like it. I could care less. I like it. I know what I am, and I am working on my defects of character. And I hope I don't steal them from you tonight. That's the way it is. 8. 8. Make a list of all persons we at home and came willing to make amends to them all. I became willing to do that. I was willing to do that when I did 4 and 5. I always wanted to tell people how sorry I was. I told you that at the beginning, so that wasn't no big deal. Today, I'm serious about it. I made a list. The list came from 4 and 5. I got ready to make amends, and one of my greatest amends was made to a cousin of mine. And I always talk about this because God is in charge of amends, folks. When you get to 9 and you got the list ready and you're ready to do it, God is in charge of amends. You don't have to run all around the country trying to find them all, send them all 1,000 letters. Believe me, when it's time for Mr. So-and-so and Miss So-and-so to show up, they're going to show up. I had been trying to get to the country to make amends to 2 cousins that I had acted a fool with the last of my drinking. And I couldn't get to them. Every time I'd get within an inch of that country town, I'd turn and them going the other way, and I couldn't understand why I wasn't supposed to do it. Well, a great uncle of mine on my mother's side passed away. And on the grave side of that uncle's funeral, he was my great-great uncle. He was their great uncle. I made amends for those 2 cousins and told them I was how wrong. Thing I could do to get it right. One cousin accepted my amends. The other cousin didn't.
and that was okay, because they don't have to accept your amends. I want you to know that. That is not a factor in the deal. That was on a Tuesday. On a Sunday, the same next Sunday, I was sitting in my church, and very few people called me at church. My sister called me from Bryan, Texas, to tell me that my cousin Gladys had just passed away. She was the cousin that had accepted my amends on Tuesday. Let me tell you something. God's in charge of my life. And I don't have to run around doing nothing God ain't ready for me to do. When time is right, it works. I continue to take personal inventory. And I got this wheel cleaned off. When I did these steps with Sandy and when I did these steps with the lady, and I have done amends, let me tell you something. I'm one of those people, I do 4 and 5s all the time. I do one a year. Some people say, hey, you do yours like you need to do it. If you're going to do one and make it fine. Let me tell you something. I continue to take personal inventory and penal. But sometimes I miss some stuff. And I haven't got time for it all climbed back up 25 years, so now I'll be still trying to get it all off. So I do 4 and 5s quite a bit, but I do a personal inventory. I continue to take personal inventory at night. If I've harmed you, I'm definitely going to try to get it right tonight. If it ain't too late, I'm going to call you tonight. If it's still too late, I will call you the next day. And I continue to do that. I want to keep my wheel clean and shiny because I work real hard to do it. Start through prayer and meditation at step 11. Let me talk about step 11. When I had my pretty cause to the husband I married to today, oh yeah, I better tell you this, I always fail to say this. My first husband is deceased. And because he's deceased, I didn't have to go to jail for bigamy. I want to tell you that. So that's why I'm still living. Still not in prison. I married to the husband I married to today when I finally realized that I wasn't legally married to him. We finally got married and got it right. So this time we'll be married 7, going on 8 years next month. But all together we've been together 25 years. So you see, we've been together a long time. And you talk about seeing me getting good, bad, and indifferent, he's walked with me all the way through it all. In the process, he used to keep me in these pretty cars, and I'd wash my cars, and I'd park them under the tree, and the birds would mess on my car, on my hall wash. I'd get so pissed off at them birds, and I said, God, why don't you move the cotton-picking birds? Never dawned on me to move the car. Move the birds. See what I'm saying? So, in the process of getting sober, I decided to just park at the edge of my driveway one day, and birds was flying from the tip, from their nest to the air conditioner getting water. And they was flying back. I thought that's the prettiest thing I had ever seen. I said, God, that is pretty. Then it dawned on me I didn't like birds. What had happened to me? It's called 12 steps. It's called taking the steps. When you take the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, you change on the inside. This is an inside job, folks. So I start to meditate. I get up and I got a 12 and 12 book. I got a 24-hour book. I do the 24-hour book. And I do 2 Al-Anon books. And I do the third step prayer. And my life continues to change on a daily basis. I'm willing to do whatever it takes to change. I was so upset when I was an alcoholic. When I found out I was an alcoholic, I am now a non-practicing alcoholic. I will always be an alcoholic that will never change. If you in here and think you are never going to stay, the only thing that I'm not going to do is drink again, one day at a time. And I am going to become a sober alcoholic. But I hated that. So I had to fall through prayer and meditation. I was at a state convention. Before I do step 12, I want to read something to you. I was at a state convention, and a nun read this, and it impressed me. And I want to read it to you. And it's called Which Place? I dreamed one night I passed away and left this world behind. I started down a lonesome trail, some of my friends to find. I came to a sideboard on the trail, directions it did tell. Keep right to go to heaven, turn left to go to hell. I hadn't been too good on earth, just a hopeless, boozing wreck. And I knew that at the crossroads, the path I had to take. I started down that rocky path that led to Satan's place and shook inside and shook within, not knowing just what I had to face. Oh, Satan met me at the gate. What is your name, my friend? I said, I'm old sober Sam, who came to a sad end. He glanced through his files. You made a mistake, I fear. You're listed here as an alcoholic. We don't want you here. I said, I'm looking for my friend. And a smile stood on his face. If your friends are alcoholics, they're in the other place. So I went back down the other way to the crossroad I did see. Then turned right to go to heaven as happy as could be. St. Peter smiled and said, come in, for you have a birth. You are an alcoholic. You've been through hell on earth. I saw old Dab, and old Pete too, and a gal named Belle. And brother was I tickled, because I thought they'd gone to hell. So brother, I'll take one. Learn something from this trip. You've got a place in heaven if you try hard not to slip. If someone tempts you with a drink when you're not feeling well, just tell them you're going to heaven and they can go to hell. Haven't had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. We try to carry the message to alcoholics. Now, I hit him in the head with it. We try to carry the message and to practice these principles in all our affairs. That is what I've tried to do tonight. I know I have a long way to go, but one day at a time, with your help, your love, and your understanding, I'm going to make it. Come on, go with it. Thanks again very much.